Noelle Phillips is a faculty member at Douglas College in Vancouver, British Columbia. Her primary research area is in late medieval book culture and Middle English literature, particularly Piers Plowman, Chaucer, and Lydgate. She has also developed a serious scholarly interest in beer and brewing, which is amazing. And both contemporary and medieval, she's published Craft Beer Culture and Modern Medievalism, Brewing Dissent with Arc Humanities Press in 2019, and her co-edited collection with John Geck and Rosemary O'Neill, Beer and Brewing in Medieval Culture and Contemporary Medievalism, which came out in 2023 from Palgrave Macmillan.
And the second member of this pair is Carissa Harris. Carissa Harris is Associate Professor of English at Temple University. She's the author of Obscene Pedagogies, Transgressive Talk and Sexual Education in Medieval Britain, and with Sarah Bechel and Elisaveta Strakhov, co-edited Rape Culture and Female Resistance in Late Medieval Literature from Penn State in 2022, as well as a colloquium in the 2022 Studies in the Age of Chaucer titled Historicizing Content. That's absolutely exactly wrong. Historicizing Consent. Last year, she published a chapter on Ballad on an Ale Cellar, from Tapsters to Beer Wenches, thus almost removing by one this from consideration as a Canterbury Fail. From Tapsters to Beer Wenches, Women, Alcohol, and Misogyny, Then and Now in Beer and Brewing in Medieval Culture and Contemporary Medievalism. So Carissa and Noelle, come on up.
Please welcome them.
So we got a bit of a hint about our text from the title of Carissa's chapter, which is one of Lydgate's treasures, his many treasures.
Many treasures.
Ballad on an Ale Cellar, which is addressed to the women in Canterbury, specifically, who sell ale. And this is an interesting poem that kind of, we chatted about this, it kind of falls between, it's between two different related genres, right?
Yeah, it's like, it's not a drinking song exactly, because those are meant to be sung in the alehouse, you know, like, fill the pot, maid, ho, butler, ho, that are addressed to those who are selling alcohol, you know, encouraging them to sell you more, basically. So it's not a drinking song exactly, although it's set in an alehouse.
Yeah, those drinking songs are really convivial and...
Who among us does not love ho, butler, ho?
we've all said it at Bells. But it's also not quite the same as some of the alewife literature. I think it's more similar, but in the type of Eleanor, the Tunning of Eleanor Rumming, Piers Plowman's, Brewster's, the Chester plays alewife, who, you know, is in hell because of all her bad brewing. So it's somewhere in between these. And we're, rather than actually reading out the poem, it's 9 stanzas, we're actually just going to be going through the stanzas and chatting about them, and hopefully you get a sense of what this poem is about and what Lydgate thinks he is doing. So I'm going to start with the first stanzas. The first couple stanzas open with telling us in Latin notations that this is about the ale sellers in Canterbury, the women who sell ale in Canterbury. And Lydgate opens with this word, remembering, that he says he's remembering the great unstableness, the doubleness, the deceit of these women. And this focus in the first couple stanzas returns throughout the poem. He starts to frame his relationship with this ale seller in, or at least maybe her behavior, I think in economic terms. This idea of she is counterfeit, she has counterfeit cheer. She is kind of deceiving him. She's not recompensing him in the way that he thinks that she should. So he introduces that idea and the idea of trust, or affi, which ends each stanza, or affiance, which reoccurs throughout. So these first couple stanzas, we start to see who he's talking to and kind of why he's talking to her. I thought it was interesting, Carissa, when I found one very little thing written about this by Arthur Moore in 1951. He says, the Ballad on an Ale Cellar is one of Lydgate's most honest lyrical pieces. Now, I think Lydgate is a grade A bitch in this poem. So if that's his honest view, let us take a look at exactly what he's doing. So the first stanza where he talks about her cheer, her doubleness, her counterfeitness, he says as he remembers this, he's going to take his pen and he stands in a trance. And then he calls on his own experience, right?
Yes.
Which you sort of mentioned made you think of Wipe It Back.
Yeah, I know. It makes you think, like, this opening, turning to experience, it makes you think of the Wife of Bath's prologue, and also this idea that the speakerly persona is kind of drawing on his own experience in the alehouses of Canterbury, and that he's writing this to a particular individual.
And he has the authority, therefore, to do so. So the second stanza, we get more of a sense of who he's talking to, but we also start to realize, and this is something I hadn't really noticed the first time I read the poem, but that Lydgate has two audiences in mind here. The second stanza opens with a little Latin notation, so this is a second Latin one, saying, note the ale seller's deceptions through their physical signs. In other words, use some kind of body language, like life hacks, to figure out, what she's actually trying to do. There's a bit of an incel vibe that's happening, that starts to happen here. So he says, your calling look, your sort of shoulders, looking over your shoulders, your bare breasts, your laughter, your sad or heavy kissing, that this is something used to call men, to lure men into your snares, to deceive them, to make men put their trust in you, to take money out of their purse. Because they are at a bar and she is selling them beer. So he is seems to be speaking to her and saying, this is what you're doing. But of course, what he's actually talking to is other men.
Exactly. I know. It's so homosocial, where he's like, other men, like, look at this, pay attention to these things. Yeah. These are the kinds of women who try to deceive you, who are like serving alcohol, their tits out, flirting with you. Like, these are the women you have to be careful of.
You have to watch out. And he puts it in Latin, so it's learned men who are going to pay attention to this. And it's almost like I get this sort of image of Lydgate with like an imagined crowd of bros behind him watching as he shakes his finger at this ale seller who probably flirted with other guys at the bar as well as him. Very disappointing. He's the kind of guy, if he goes to a strip club, he's going to think all the strippers really like him. So he's set up his audience and his vocabulary.
Exactly.
In those first two stanzas.
Yeah, and one of the other things that he does here too that kind of carries out throughout the stanzas is he accuses her of making men do various things. He says, like all of these, things they do, they make men to fawn, to become foolish. You make men put their trust in you, their affiance in you. And so this, you make men do this, you make men do that, that rhetoric of making men do things recurs throughout the stanzas. And so kind of also making us think about agency and gender and how the ale seller, who would likely be a tapster, someone who's just paid to sell ale to,
Very low socioeconomic level.
She's not making the ale. She's not like Eleanor Rumming brewing the ale. She's just serving it. And that's a position that's, lower status, often single women and, who are associated with sex work as well. And so it's this kind of, so he's saying, through your position of selling men alcohol, you're making them do these various things.
But notice that even if she makes it, all these different roles in terms of the labor related to alcohol all become kind of conflated.
Yeah.
Because of the woman's proximity to this industry and implying that she's also available to sell her body or to sell her attention to them.
And that they deserve her exclusive attention.
Yeah.
So there's this there's this idea that that she is violating the agreement that they have made because she is not giving them their exclusive attention. And then he goes on, he's like, When they have money to spend in their purse, neither night nor day they can themselves withset. They can't restrain themselves from, from paying you for your alcohol. They have to borrow and bring themselves in debt because they believe that you actually love them, that your attention you're showing them is genuine. So therefore, it is your fault that they then have nothing left financially.
She has forced them into it.
So maketh men, over and over.
There's a funny little thing that we talked about this. We weren't really sure what it meant. There's a bit here where it says, in each of them you put a garlic head, or to each of them you give a garlic head, and you swear, well, this head is whole, I shall love you forever, which seems to be a weird promise to make. I was wondering actually if there isn't some kind of association with some kind of witchcraft or a spell of some kind, and the kind of association of, think of Eleanor Rumming, and the spells that she gives other women to seduce men, and sometimes the spells are related to things you put in the beer. It struck me as something very weirdly superstitious.
Yeah, and also the connection to the domestic, and this,
yeah.
Making us think about labor and who's doing the labor and who deserves that labor.
And what labor is valuable. Yeah. So after he blames her for making men spend their money, he then basically goes on to accuse her of something even what feels like it's worse. He says that because of this, you're putting men at risk, like you're putting them in danger. And he says this is because of your beauty and your feigned plaisance, Venus to serve. In other words, that she's pretending that she's working for the benefit of Venus or in the service of Venus. She's doing fake flirting with men. And because of these things, you're caused men to, it says, to wander in mind, to make them unwise. Or full unsaged, to walk alone. And then he kind of ends his stanza by kind of lamenting, in whom shall men trust?
In whom indeed?
Like, what will they do now? I don't know. Like, don't you, like, you could see who he's trying to, like, oh, like, he's like, don't you guys feel for me? So he's after this sort of lament, he kind of, what I feel like, he kind of returns. We talked about Lydgate as a poet here and the labor of a poet. He returns to this moment where he holds the pen at the beginning. You know, in remembrance of your vain beauty and how fake you are, I pick up my pen and I stand in a trance. It's almost like he's about to write something. He says down here, this next stanza, that he will not compare her to Griselda, to Penelope, to Lucrece. In other words, to women who have undergone severe abuse without complaining and while still loving their men. He says, you do not deserve to be written in among these women. And in fact, he says it would be a great wrong to include, to write your life among those legends because you're so, basically he says, you're so changeable in terms of who you put your trust in or who trusts in you that you could change in a moment, he says. And this, I find, I'm just imagining, so this is my hypothesis. Imagining Lydgate in Canterbury, he's writing all the time. He's writing poetry all over the place, right? We know this about Lydgate. He wants to make money from it. He's probably telling the women at the pub that he's a poet. It's like, he's probably like kind of like Chaucer, you know? He's like, you know, Chaucer writes the legends of good women. He goes, I'm thinking of writing a poem about some really amazing women. And he's like, you're just so beautiful. You know, maybe I could write a poem about you. And now he's like,
I will not.
I will not. Just screw you. I feel this becomes personal for him a little bit. I'm not going to write about you. There's no way. Because you have, now he kind of indicates that this system of reciprocity or kind of economic exchange, it's set in an ale house, it's a place of economic exchange, that she hasn't fulfilled her end of whatever labor that's supposed to be. She served him beer, she's sold him beer, but she hasn't engaged with him in the way that he has expected. It feels like he's kind of changed the goalposts here, that it's no longer just an exchange of different kinds of labor. It's now she's expected to do something much more. And he never kind of delineates what was initially expected, but clearly something in that exchange is missing for him.
Yeah, and it brings us to Kate Mann's work on misogyny, thinking about their, you know, for in her words, there's this expectation of female-coded goods and services that he thinks that he deserves, along with the expectation that these female-coded goods and services are exclusive, you know, exclusively due to him.
Yeah.
And that kind of thwarted entitlement and thwarted expectation of exclusivity is what's kind of driving all of this. And so, yeah, and then these last stanzas, there's something really, really interesting and weird because he says, you know, gladly ye will to get you acquaintance, call men to drink, although they therefore pay. It's like, well, what else? You know, this ain't a free ale house. And so it's really fascinating because he's like, you will gladly, because you want to get yourself companionship, because you want friends, you will call men to drink, although then they have to pay for it. And so I think that there's something really weird going on here with exclusivity. And also this idea about, you know, the economics of the alehouse, that she calls men to drink because she wants companionship, she wants friends, she wants social power. And this idea, too, that he shouldn't have to pay. It says, although they therefore pay. This idea that payment is this, like, unexpected and unwelcome part of the interaction. So he frames it as getting acquainted. You know, she's trying to get acquaintance. So she's like, hey, drink with me. And then she changes the terms and makes it actually about payment. So again, they're kind of missing it. You know, he's kind of willfully misreading the economic terms.
Even though her title is ale seller, that's who he's writing to.
I know. Like, what do you think this is? Like, this ain't someone's living room. And then he says, you know, you call them in a drink, and then they have to pay. How dare you? And then he says, you know, you make them, you kiss them, and you give them pleasure. But then it shall be dearer than all your ale, because with your ale and with your cheer so sly, ye then deceive in whom you most defy. And so this kind of conflating her cheer so sly with her ale, and kind of in you know, and pointing her out as this agent of intoxication, that she's kind of using the alcohol to manipulate them and deceive them, in addition to her kind of, you know, her friendly service.
And there's an the dearer than all your ale, it's more expensive than all your ale. So there's some additional expense that he feels the men are paying to her, other than just for the ale. Again, these unspoken terms of exchange, which he constantly puts on her and never on himself.
Yeah, and this idea too that, you know, perhaps they are paying the damage to their reputations, mm-hmm. their dignity, that they're paying much more than just the money. And yeah, at the end, I love the ending because he's like, you know, you deserve most due reward to recompense your great unstableness. So again, we have this language of economics and what she, you know, and he's like, you know, you deserve something in exchange for this. Not money, no. And so there's this sense that he's writing this song, you know, this poem to her as the payment. He's like, you want payment? Here's your payment. I wrote these stanzas for you. Thank you. And so, you know, again, kind of bringing us back to ideas about payment, exchange, and labor, who is owed, you know, and under what conditions, and what are the terms of this transaction?
Yeah, and he also seems to somewhat think that she owes more because in this system that he kind of wraps up at the end, because of the fact that nature has given her a lot.
Yeah.
He says, he talks about how nature has given her so much attention and has formed her with beauty and pleasure and has given her an abundance, like almost like that idea of surplus, which was already mentioned, that she has so much of this and therefore she owes men in some way. It's actually quite a dark view of women and their place in men's world.
Well, let's
and
in,
and that is that is Lydgate for us. I do feel that the location of this in Canterbury, directed to women in Canterbury, it does feel very targeted.
Yeah.
And it does feel like he is kind of coding this specifically for one person.
Yeah, and I think it's so fascinating too, the kind of the link here between alcohol consumption and these sites of alcohol consumption with sexual behavior, sexual transgression, this lack of inhibition, and also kind of implicating her in all of this, where she's just trying to do her job.
No, she's making them do it.
Yes, I know. And instead, there's this, again, thinking about agency and how that's working here.
Yeah, and how the space itself actually is contributing to this entire exchange and the expectations placed on her. Yeah.
Yeah. And the piece that I wrote for Noelle's collection, what I was really in, you know, what I do at the end of it is I kind of connect this, especially, you know, that line, like, your breasts bare, I dare well write it, well write ashore, you know, to kind of the contemporary restaurant.
Yes.
These places where, we're Hooters, you know, I spent so much time on Hooters' website, you have no idea. Close reading their advertisement. I'm thinking about, you know, these establishments in which one goes, you know, you eat mediocre wings, or maybe they're good, I don't know. You drink large amounts of beer, and you also expect these female-coded goods and services as part of what you're paying for.
Yeah. And their attention.
Yeah.
And honestly, this is how women in these contexts make money.
Yeah.
And so Langland can, like, be snippy about women like selling beer deceitfully or taking glutton into the tavern, but really this is a way for women to be self-sufficient, to make money, to feed themselves. And the same goes for modern day servers, for modern day sex workers. These are ways in which women have always been expected to behave. And that reciprocity, the flirting or the attention to men, is part of what is often considered their job.
Because you will not get a tip if you do not do that.
And that's a socioeconomic reality, I think, both then and now.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that resonates so much with my students when we read this poem, is because a lot of them are bartenders and kind of work in the service industry. And it's so frustrating to them how little seems to have changed the attitudes that are, you know, and the expectations that are put on, you know, female-presenting people who are serving alcohol in these situations.
So I think just next time you're at Hooters, imagine Lydgate there.
Because he would be.
Yeah, he would be.
My takeaway is Lydgate as incel, which is disturbing as hell.